Welcome back to episode 3. I'm joined again with Rob. And today we're going to be discussing a new camera that I need to buy. We're going to be discussing my relationship with Godox and their equipment. When you're not a guy with camera kind of creepy person, because I think I've created a little bit of confusion with that, and the gear pushing world of YouTube. We're also going to try and phone my agent, and if he doesn't pick up, we're going to phone someone else. We'll go through my phone book, see who's going to pick up, because Rob has very kindly connected my phone to the podcast. So it feels only right that we start phoning every Tom, Dick and Harry in my phone book, which could be very interesting or very humiliating. We'll see. But yeah, Rob's just been working with me on some logo creation for some pictures we're doing, which has been...
Yeah, it's been a day of graphic design today.
Yeah, mostly graphic design with the cycling on in the background for me, not for you.
Not me so much.
No. It's not really in your best interest, but I've been enjoying it. But where do we start? We'll probably start with the gear pushing on YouTube, because that's probably a good place to start with the things we have lined up to discuss today. And then we'll do some business stuff later if Pete picks up the phone. So one of the comments was like, it was discussing, were they asking us our thoughts on the gear pushing, or were they just saying, why is YouTube full of gear pushing? I don't quite remember.
Yeah, it was basically somebody was initially asked, can we talk about the specs of a as yet unreleased camera? And then asked a bit later on, you know, what we thought of the gear pushing and influencers and how the brands themselves are fairly knee deep in that.
Yeah, and I think it's an interesting one because they mentioned is there a new Canon camera?
Yes, there is.
Okay, so I didn't know there's a new Canon camera, and I think what you probably find is that what you get on YouTube is an echo chamber. So if you start watching gear videos, you'll get more gear videos. I don't get any gear videos come off my YouTube.
I get some because I'm, you know, the resident tech nerd.
Yes, yeah, you get the techie stuff, and I don't.
Yeah, so I do get that, and yes, there has been the release of the EOS R1.
Is that like the top of the line sports?
Yeah. It's basically their first attempt at the full mirrorless, as opposed to the previous 1DX, which was kind of a hybrid.
Right.
And of course, it's the Euro football this summer.
Oh, great timing!
So of course, get your brand new sports camera out just in time for everyone to buy one for the football.
Yeah. I think with anything, I've been looking at a new car. You look at car videos; it's all kit related, very rarely about actually how to drive. You know, you look at music and there's a lot of stuff about speakers, not what sounds nice, but like what makes nice sound. It's an easy way for somebody who's into something to get an instant win by going, I bought better image quality, my images are better.
Yes. Yeah, and I'll be looking at 3D printers, so I've had a very, very similar week on the YouTubes.
But people want to see the answer. You get a 3D printer, now you can 3D print something.
Yeah.
But a video and going, here's how to come up with better creative concepts, isn't an instant fix. It's not as...
No, I mean, in fact, there's almost none of that. I, as you know, I'm also a CAD engineer, so I'm fully happy to create my own files and things to be created and 3D printed. But almost every video I've been looking at, again, deciding which printer I wanted to go with, because I wanted something with quite an actual large sort of build area, you know, anything up to a 15-inch part is useful for me and what I do for certain clients. So that was kind of a tick on the wish list for me. And there aren't that many large platform 3D printers out there, at least at a sensible price anyway. And every one of them was talking about the actual machine. None of them really mentioned about what it's like to live with and its little quirks. It was just kind of... you know, sort of recite the spec sheet verbatim and say, this is definitely the one you want.
And you know, that's the same with car reviews, bike reviews, camera reviews. It's very difficult to find somebody who has lived with that bit of kit, because normally when kit comes out, nobody knows.
No, exactly. And there's always the... What do they call it? The release window on YouTube, where everybody has one. Everybody has the chance to play with it, but nobody can talk about it until a certain date when the embargo lifted. And then there's an absolute avalanche of the same videos everywhere. The only person that actually, and somebody I actually quite enjoy watching their content, is Philip Bloom. Who's always deliberately the last person, generally speaking, to post a video much about anything, because he's very much, let's get hands-on with it. And rather than, again, just recite specs, which what most of them sort of tend to do, is actually almost like a real-world example of what it's like to have this piece of kit and what does it do for you.
Yeah, because I know with my Fuji camera, I watched a lot of reviews on it before I bought it, but none of the people reviewing it came up with any of the issues that I came across. And, you know, this is people, like, oh, I've had it for a year, but it's like, but they're not using it as a pro. You go and ask another pro photographer, and they're like, yeah, tethering that is a dog.
Well, there's also that, and then you have to understand the world of the influencer.
Yes.
As well. And I absolutely hate that word with, I can't stand the term. It's just the most entitled thing I've ever heard in my life. I'm an influencer. But that's the name of those. And they don't tend to tell you about problems for a very specific reason, is that they want more endorsements, sponsorships, and will only talk positively about anything for that reason, and is that it benefits them to do that.
Yes, yeah, I think you're right. You know, if you go and slam a product, it's very rare they send you another one. You'll notice I don't get many repeat businesses of free gear sent here after I've slammed it. They're normally like, well, we're not sending him anything else again. He tells us why.
No,
it's
but in fairness, you don't tend to do many gear reviews. I mean, you're certainly not a gear review channel like some of them are exclusively.
No, definitely. Yeah, definitely not. Which is probably a pretty good segue into Godox.
Ah, yes.
And my hatred to Godox, because I made a couple of videos explaining why pros don't use Godox due to the way the industry works, which the internet was furious about, absolutely furious about, because some people making a living do use Godox, and obviously I didn't cover every single human being in the world's potential business model. There's a lot of comments going around going, oh, Scott hates Godox. I don't hate Godox. Godox is really good. Godox is the best bang for buck lighting you can buy. There's nothing competing against Godox that I'm aware of in their price range.
No, other than rebranded Godox.
Yeah,
like Pixapro, exactly, yeah. And such.
I mean, they've released their new video stuff, the Nold. Is it called Nold by Godox?
I think so. I know the ones you mean.
LED?
Yeah.
It's Nold. I don't really understand how that's going to sell, because you've got Godox's name on there, which is known as Budget, but the price higher than Aperture.
Yeah, there's... I mean, at some point, I guess you have to sort of drag yourself up by the bootstraps, and, you know, you don't only want to be that budget brand, because obviously, as a manufacturer, they're very capable. So Aperture did it the correct way around in most cases, in that they started high and they can always come down.
Yeah.
And you know, you built the brand image and the desirability, and then all of a sudden, now you can all of a sudden own a piece of that at an affordable price. You know, and Godox have got the more difficult way, known for being a budget brand. As you say, decent bang for buck, decent build quality and what have you. But now to try and edge yourself up into that premium level, it's trying to get people to take you seriously. And why would you buy that over the proven road-tested Aperture?
Exactly. And that's pretty much the same in like photography and stills. Why would you go and risk it with some Godox stuff, which is known to be budget, when you can take Broncolor?
Yeah. And I do watch your videos. The takeaway for me every time the Godox come up is, if you actually listen to what you say rather than just fly off the handle, it's, I like Godox. Godox works well. However, most assistants don't know how to use a Godox pack. Therefore, it's better for me to use Broncolor on set, because my assistants know how to use it.
Yeah, I mean, we had the Godox pack, the PE2400, in the studio for a week, and I don't know anybody who's actually had one of those packs, the 2400 watt packs. It's just not an option. But there's nothing wrong with Godox. It's absolutely fine. It does a good job. It has issues with power consistency, white balance consistency, which, again, if you don't notice it, then it's not a problem for you.
Yeah, and if the kind of work you do doesn't rely on you having, you know, 100 shots where they have to be completely light, balanced, color accurate, and exposed correctly. And this is back down to also using manual lenses and not
electronic
apertures for that reason, that you do get a shift. If you don't do that kind of work, they're perfectly fine.
Yeah. And I think anyone charging less than 30 grand a day, use Godox.
It's good kit.
Yeah. I'd still use Godox if I could. It's just the professional ecosystem doesn't allow for it.
Yeah.
There's like, I'd have to own everything, and the maths doesn't maths, but there's nothing wrong with the kit. There's nothing wrong with most kit, really. Which brings us through to my new camera I need. So I've obviously got my very fancy stills camera.
You do?
But I'm doing portrait work soon. And I've been threatening this for ages. But I've done two tests so far. Two friends have very kindly lent me their faces, and I've had a quick crack at that. And we've done an edit of both of them. They came out kind of how I wanted them to. The first one was better than the second one, but I need a camera that I can actually shoot portraits on where the subject doesn't sit like a can of baked beans.
Yes.
Because they do move. I do probably need autofocus.
So you do need, yes, you absolutely do need autofocus.
Or at least manual focus that I can focus on the lens, not on a an entire bellows system, because that's not ideal.
Portraiture doesn't really lend itself to a technical camera, does it?
Not so much. I mean, you can. It's a very slow way of working. It's not ideal. It's probably better way of working in many technical terms, but in practical terms, it's not. And my initial thought was, I go and buy an 80mm lens for my Fuji GFX. But the problem with that is that the files are huge. And shooting into my computer at any speed causes it to have a meltdown.
Yes.
So it wouldn't just be a lens, it'd be a lens and a new computer. The lens is about $2,000. New computer's what, $3,000 for a new laptop?
Yeah, about $4,000 for anything worth having. But yeah,
so that's $6,000. Or I buy a lens and a 50 megapixel camera. Same Fuji, because I like the color science. Yeah. But maybe I buy an old secondhand 50 megapixel for portraits.
Yeah, it makes sense.
At least you're
in that ecosystem now where you can do that and then things become interchangeable.
Or do I buy a Hasselblad? An old one. I can get like a P45 16-bit color, 45 megapixels for like $2,000-$3,000.
And you've, to my knowledge, I've never had a digital Hasselblad, have you?
I've had a digital Hasselblad, but with a phase one back.
That was it.
Which I would go for the phase one back, not the Hasselblad back, because I'm not learning Hasselblad software on top of Capture One, but... Maybe. I mean, phase ones are pretty cheap now as well.
All things are relative.
The old ones, but I can get like a P65 back, which is like a full frame digital back, 16-bit. And that's what... and it's CCD sensor as well, which is nice for portraits.
Yep.
Not so much for the food stuff I do. That's what, $3,000?
Yeah, which is...
pretty good.
Less than you pay for a Canon R5.
So yeah. Much better camera.
As a comparison, so... You know, and again, it's back to the value for money in the gear pushing, is that the manufacturers always want you to have the latest and latest and feel like you're missing out. The only exception to that rule, actually, I think, and again, it's very much more in the video-centric world, but it's Blackmagic design.
Yeah.
I mean, I was a very early adopter of the Pocket series, and literally as soon as that came out, I knew game changer. You know, this is definitely something I want to invest in and get on board with. And after a relatively short 3-month waiting list, and at the time there was anything over a year, so I got very lucky. I bought one of those cameras. I think I was 2017 now, which doesn't seem like 5 minutes ago, but it's a long time ago.
Yeah, it's a while back.
And the point is, only very recently they've released another firmware update for that camera.
Yeah, they're quite good.
So they're still supporting it. Canon would be like, oh no, you've got to buy the new one.
Well, I mean, Canon wouldn't even offer me professional servicing because my cameras weren't modern enough.
Yeah, throw that in the bin and buy it. So it's almost not so much a planned obsolescence in that the Canon cameras are very good. I mean, I'm still shooting stills on a pair of 6Ds that I bought in 2013 and 2014.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and until they literally break, I don't see any reason to upgrade.
No, absolutely. But I also think, like, with the... a lot of people assume that once Canon no longer, or whichever brand, but Canon no longer support the repairs, that you can't get them repaired, but you can. Like, I send my Canon cameras into this place in Shoreditch in London. They'll still service a 1D original. They'll service anything from, like, the beginning of time.
Yeah, it's just down to availability of parts, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
I mean, Canon, the service centre seems to be, even in-date cameras, and to be fair, a lot of them operate on the same model, Blackmagic included, actually. If the slightest thing tends to go wrong with it,
PC board.
It'll be a brand new PCB, and basically, because they don't actually service it per se.
Yeah.
It's, well, we'll swap the board out for you and give you effectively a new camera inside the old shell.
Yeah.
Just because that makes sense for them to do that.
It's like Trigger's broom, isn't it?
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah, that's very much what I've discovered as well. I've got cameras that have got new shutters, a new PCB, but it's just the old shell. Which I've actually got one down here for those watching us in video. For those not, I'll do a very detailed explanation. But I've got my original number one 5D Mark II, which is my third camera I owned. Had a 50D, 5D Mark I, 5D Mark II. This has had two shutter replacements and either two or three PC board replacements.
And it's still held together with tape.
It's still got a little bit of gaff tape on it, quite a bit of gaff tape on it. And it's got my 100mm gold ring lens on it. And I bought the lens hood, not because you need it, but because it looks more pro. So for those who can see the video, it looks a bit Mickey Mouse like this. Because it gets bigger and then like shrinks in. But what you really want is like a good... You also want to make sure your lens is a a lens that focuses internally, because the last thing you want to see is like an extending.
Yeah.
That always looks a little bit amateur to me when you've got a lens that's like extending out and put it on the table with a big clunk.
Yeah. And pro tip, if you actually want to really, really look the part, paint it white.
Yeah. Get that white paint out. But yeah, that's what I shot with back in the day when I shot people. Which is an awful segue for me to go into the guys with cameras, because I made a video discussing that, you know, you can't be that middle-aged man photographing young girls as a job because it says creepy guy with camera. And everyone else is like, oh, so it's not creepy if Annie Leibovitz photographs young boys, or it's not creepy if David Bailey photo. And it's not the photographing of the young people that's creepy. It's the motive. And, you know, Annie Leibovitz's work's beautiful. David Bailey's work's beautiful. It's not just that, are you good or not? But there is something, isn't there, somewhere in there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you take Annie Leibovitz as an example, like, yeah, she's photographed various celebrities naked. But that's not what she does exclusively. It's just a part of her portfolio, her body of work.
Yeah, I was going to bring out Mario then as an example, but that's a bad example because he was creepy. It's not... I think it's the same with, like, I know a certain lighting brand got in trouble a few years ago because their basic advert was, here's a hot girl being shot with our lights, you know, which is not okay, because the premise of the whole advert was, she's hot.
Yeah, it's exploitative, you know, and that's,
yeah,
you know, the, your language has to be, you know, better than that now.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
The world has moved on, you know, it's not the swinging 60s anymore.
No, exactly, you know, and I think, you know, you've got to move with the times as well. But it's more the camera club creepy guy with camera, isn't it? Is that like...
Again, it's, you know, there's nothing sort of wrong with, you know, sort of photographing people in any, you know, dressed or undressed or otherwise.
Exactly.
It's when your entire body of work is just that, then that does present a certain image to people.
So what really shocked me was I went to the photography show to do a load of meetings with brands that I work with. And to meet a photographer or director, actually, who was doing a presentation that I wanted to have a chat with as well. And I went around taking photographs of every stand that had a half-naked girl as their main marketing ploy. So basically it was like, guys, come gather with your cameras. And there's always middle-aged men with like a 70 to 200 white lens on a Canon body, as you, I'm sure you can spot them.
Oh, yes.
Photographing these half-naked girls, which is the marketing to drag the people into the store. And I don't know. It doesn't sit well with me. I have no qualm with people photographing naked stuff. I represent two photographers who have got like substantial amounts of naked work in their portfolio, but they're not creepy, is that?
Yeah, as I say, it's down to everything, you know, and tone of voice is very important in the work that you present as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you can photograph naked people exclusively and be not creepy, mm-hmm. and you can photograph one naked person and be very creepy.
Yeah, and this is the... Oh, well, just because she's naked does not make it fine art.
Yeah, exactly.
you know, let's make that sort of very clear. There's an absolute difference.
Yeah.
You know, some things are you know, tastefully done and are artistic. And other things, it's just the naked person.
Yeah. Do you reckon I could take some very distasteful food photographs that have come under creepy?
I think so. I mean, you've got inspiration from the movie Sausage Party.
Yeah.
So you can use that as your base.
We could get on there, couldn't we? I'll tell you what, should we try and phone Pete, see if this all works?
Yes, let's see. So this is as much of anything, this is the reason I'm here again, is this as much of a tech check as anything else. So.
Yeah, we'll give him a buzz, see if it works.
So hopefully we find out all the kinks.
And we're going to ask him about AI, moving image, and the state of the industry at the moment, because they're all very much interesting things. Let's see if he picks up. Nice unannounced call. This could be embarrassing if he doesn't.
Well, good news is we've got levels on the Vocaster Hub, so
yeah.
This is encouraging.
This is the Vodafone voicemail.
Oh, he's done me dirty. He's phoned me back. But yeah, so I was going to ask you some questions about photography for other photographers.
Yeah, go on then.
How bad is the industry at the moment, Pete?
It's picking up. It was dire, and majority of people that I've spoken to said last year was their worst year in business. It was absolutely dreadful.
Yep.
But now it is picking up, and I think things are settling down a bit.
Yeah, it was definitely bad last year, wasn't it?
It was pretty dreadful. I mean, nobody was commissioning anything, really, of any substance. And what they were doing, they were rehashing old ads to make them look fresh and new. Plus, a lot of globalisation as well. So people are just hashing ads from across the globe.
Yeah, yeah, they're not seen it in this country before, so we'll take that one, put it here, and then...
Yeah, yeah. So it's, you know, they're sort of repurposing their ads from Argentina to make it look like an English ad. You know, so it's all very strange. People just don't want to reshoot. They want to use and utilise what they've got and already shot.
Yeah, because we've had relicenses and licensing of image from test shoots, which is not something I often get.
No.
It's quite a rarity. But we're going to be okay at the end of this year. We're going to make lots of money this year.
I think this year is looking quite rosy. I mean, business terms, you know, I've done more in the last quarter than I did for the whole, say, 9 months of last year.
Yeah. Yeah.
So things are just really picking up.
And are the budgets back to normal?
No.
They're still tight.
Budgets are squeezed. Budgets are squeezed, yeah. And they want usage in perpetuity. And they want all media. So that is a real battle. And especially on global brands, because like Diageo or Heinz, they're going to want that globally and in perpetuity.
They do, don't they? Like for next to nothing.
Sorry, what's that? Sorry.
Yeah, they want to pay next to nothing, don't they, for just everything?
They want to pay they want to pay next to nothing, but they want everything.
Do you reckon that will go back to how it was before? Or?
No, it's set a precedent now, I think. And I think either you go with it or you drop out of it.
So what's gonna...
I mean, there are certain brands that always will want to recommission stuff because they've got new brands, so they need new content. And that could be just a trial if they've got a new product out that is fresh to the market. Sometimes they're just trying that, so they might just have the usage just for a year, or we could cut that down to a year and then say, if you need that again, then we can relicense that for you. So to win the job and to get the job in budget, we would turn around and say, let's license it for a year and see how you go and see if you need it.
Yeah.
And then they might buy into that.
Because if everyone goes
really,
down
really
to
tricky.
Yeah, if everyone goes just down to day rates only, which is what they're trying to push for, isn't it, really? They just want to pay a day rate and really nothing else.
Yeah, you might as well drive the underground and earn more money.
Exactly. Like, day rates are going to have to like go up to a silly amount of money. And the whole reason usage exists is because clients don't want to pay for stuff they don't need. So they just pay for the usage they want. But it's going to go like, we're all going to be charging 20 grand day rates as standard because it's the only way to stay in business.
But I don't think the big photographers are getting the jobs anymore. Either... The big jobs may go to, say, if you're shooting a Mercedes ad or, not even Rolls-Royce, anything like that. If you're shooting a premium brand or car or something like that, they may get a big name in. Or you're shooting Gucci and things like that. But then you could see someone shooting Gucci from Gen Z who's copied that look and they're doing it for a quarter of the price.
Yeah.
So it's because we live in the digital world now, that's why it's changed, is that people can manipulate images, people copy things so easily now, and techniques with lighting have changed massively. So that's why, you know, the Gen Z can copy the Nick Knights of this world for half the price.
Yeah, and then with AI as well, do you think that's going to have a big impact on our earnings?
Yes, but if you're shooting a new product that's never been shot before, then you're going to need that photographed, aren't you? But unless they do it in AI, you know, I mean, certain agencies won't use AI. Certain agencies will use AI. So it's something that we've definitely got to look at, not ignore. But is it just a updated version of CGI? Is it just a new version of creating an image that's always been with us for the last 10 years in CGI? Is it just a more sophisticated platform?
Because we still win jobs as photographers over CGI artists.
Of course you do, because it's still got that real look, isn't it?
Yeah.
Especially if you're using faces. A lot of people can see that things have been manipulated, haven't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
Kate Middleton didn't get away with it, did she?
No, that didn't go so well, did it? And then last question, with moving image and stills photographers.
Yeah.
Is there any point in doing stills only nowadays?
No, absolutely not whatsoever. I mean, there is a debate on that, that film directors turn around and say that photographers are not directors, which is true because it's all about the emotion, the narrative, the storytelling, which they've always done. I think photographers that are product photographers, it's great for them to do GIFs and a certain element of moving image, but they're not storytellers that are telling a story of a car coming down the Swiss Alps with a family and getting expression out of people.
Yeah, yeah.
That's two different things. But photographers still need to learn film, without a doubt.
Yeah, it's not like it was where you're just shooting 8x10 sheets. Yeah.
They just won't get the commissions.
Do you reckon the golden days of photography are over? Do you reckon the big payouts are gone?
I think it will always go in waves. Things do go in waves. They go in fashions, don't they? But when you look at the ads today that are on TV, there's nothing there that makes you go, well, that is something different. That is something new.
Yeah.
That's stuck in my mind.
Yeah, it's not been
there's
for a while.
Nothing like that.
It's
there?
Like good Belvedere vodka advert with Daniel Craig. But apart from that, which is the weird dance.
Yeah.
That was quite cool.
Yeah.
That was
exactly.
Actually probably a couple of years ago, really.
I mean, what was the one with Bill Collins?
Oh, the Cadbury's
one.
Yeah, but
what was the one with the Phil Collins? Yeah, Cadbury's. I mean, I know that it's quite a basic ad, but it was impactful. And you don't even see anything that is impactful these days. It's all sort of very vanilla and mundane, isn't it?
Yeah, I have a feeling that my girlfriend worked on that advert.
Really?
I think so, with a gorilla.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure she did.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was a great ad.
It
was a great ad, but you don't really get, you know, TVCs at the moment that make you think, do you?
No.
It's all a bit, you know, it's very generic, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's all very politically correct. That's what, as you know, I know we live in a politically correct world, but it had a huge impact on the way people think and express themselves, you know.
Yeah, there's quite a big
which
checklist
is correct.
Before
I know
the...
That.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's a huge checklist that you're not offending anyone, anything, or anyone, so therefore everything's become watered down and very safe, which has become boring, isn't it? I'm not talking going Benny Hill or, you know...
Yeah,
you know,
there's a lot of stuff you have to cater for before the creativity begins.
Yeah, there's so many, you know, checklists, isn't there, that you're hitting all the boxes. And if you don't hit the boxes, you're never going to get the ad through. So, you know, at the moment, everything is just so plain and safe, isn't it? And so that's not impactful, is it?
And I think without one of those checklists, you can still make a safe advert, which doesn't offend anybody. But when the creativity comes first and then the concerns over who we've offended comes afterwards, it's a better way around to almost, you know, rather than closing doors
totally,
before
totally
we even
agree.
Begin, it's better to make it and then go, right, have we done any faux pas here? Do we need to, like, change anything? But, yeah.
And then just cut it, yeah. Shoot the living daylights out of it, then cut it.
Yeah, and then charge them a fortune and we'll all go out for drinks after.
Exactly.
I don't know.
Yeah, celebrations
time. Yeah. Oh, awesome. Yeah. Cheers, Pete. Thank
the rap party's dead.
Yeah.
Okay, mate. Brilliant.
Yeah, cheers for your time, mate.
Lovely.
No worries. I'll see you on Tuesday.
All right, then. And I'll speak to you soon.
Yeah.
Yes, look forward to it.
Yes, I'll have my fancy shoes on.
When will you send the link?
For the final document.
When will you? Yeah.
In about 20 minutes.
Well, that seemed fairly successful.
I think that worked, hopefully. Now, you couldn't hear a word of that conversation.
Oh, absolutely.
Could you?
No. For the record, I literally couldn't hear a single word of that. All I can actually see here is just the levels bouncing up and down on the Vocaster hub. So
we're basically discussing how screwed we are as an industry, because TV's dead, so TV adverts are dead, so ad budgets are getting lower, and mostly the stills adverts are part of the TV advert budget.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's fun. That's good. But still making careers out of it and still not having to do real jobs, which is nice.
Yeah, and I think as you alluded to, I can at least say the question, you know, you have to incorporate moving pictures as part of your workflow moving forward. If you don't, if you're not offering that, then you really are going to struggle to stay with it, as the kids would say.
Yeah, no, very much so. And I think Pete was mentioning as well about the, well, he called it like political correctness of the adverts, and what that means on a functional level is before we can shoot an advert, we have to make sure we tick certain boxes for like key demographics and various things like that. And what that does is, because we're currently the order we're doing it, and I think this will change over the years, because it is still relatively new, is that we make sure everything's ticked off first and then we do the creative.
Yes.
Whereas I think what will happen in the future is we'll do the creative and then see what we've not ticked off and then fix it. But once you've had some restraints put in before the creative begins, the creative becomes limited.
It's what we call the DIE principle, which is diversity, inclusivity, and equity.
Right.
That's the first consideration rather than let's do something cool.
Yeah.
It's, you know, let's make sure that, you know, the messaging is as correct as possible, and then worry about how you make that cool.
Yeah, exactly. And I think what would be a better way to do it is to let's make something cool. And obviously this is then putting people's money at risk. And then let's see if it has actually ticked those boxes. And if not, let's make something else cool until we tick those boxes. So the creativity is completely limitless. But of course, there needs to be a filter.
Of course.
You can't just go around going, let's make something cool and offend half the world. Off we go. That's obviously not what you want to do.
Hire Jim Davidson for your advert.
Yeah, exactly. That'd be great. And it's difficult if somebody goes, right, here's the things you cannot do in this advert. Go and create something. Whereas if you go and create something and go, right, what have we failed to achieve here? That's a more creative way, I think, to do things.
Yeah.
But of course, time and money is the limiting factor.
But only really would need to spend more time in the planning stages, in that the brief should be go create.
Yeah.
And then before you shoot anything, right, here's our offering, here, and then dissect from there.
Yeah.
Don't start with the brief of that this is what these are the tick boxes and this is what we must or must not say to for the messaging for this particular advert, now go create from that.
Exactly, which is the way it happens. But yeah, like you say, if we went and created and then presented and then went, right, here's the bits you've got to change, at least that initial creative insight is there.
The foundation of it is a creative foundation, not a restrictive one.
But it just comes down to budgets.
Yeah, of course.
No, nobody wants to do that and then have to go, right, we're going to have to pay you to go and do that all again because there's nothing in it for them. So the creativity is dialed down a little bit sometimes. Not always. It's not always an issue. And, you know, some adverts, there's no... You know, you're shooting some vodka being poured into a glass.
Yeah.
Pour away.
I mean, it's interesting on the advertising front and the way, you know, the social trends and the law and everything. Like alcohol advertising, I mean, is a great example using the example of your vodka. Back in the day, alcohol advertising was as simple as old boys sitting in the pub with their mates having a jolly old pint.
Yeah.
And that was literally, it was the most boring thing, but that's how everybody presented theirs. And then someone along the line decided, can't do that. It's potentially dangerous. So therefore, you can't show people enjoying alcohol. And then you've got Guinness coming up with like wild horses and the Budweiser frogs and all of these things. So all of a sudden, they absolutely skyrocketed the creativity in the alcohol advertising world because they were banned from showing people actually enjoying a pint.
You can't
in the
show
pub.
People enjoying alcohol in adverts at all.
No.
It's like a hard no. That was a great era of drink adverts.
It was the best.
I loved the Guinness Sappers advert. You know, the call out. That was much later. That was like the 2000s.
Yeah.
But yeah, that the waves with the horses.
That's it, yeah.
And the tick. And
the tick follows top.
Yeah. Oh, that was such a good advert.
It was brilliant. And again, that would never have been. That would have just been some old boy in a pub in Ireland with a pint of Guinness having the crack.
Yeah, pretty much. But then I think, like, you know, that's an opposing example, like where we're saying at the moment all these rules are making it more difficult. Having that rule in place made it better.
Oh, completely. Because people had to start thinking outside the box a bit.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe we just need to reframe how we're working around the current things that we're trying to, you know, incorporate into every advert. And, you know, I'm sure with time it will go that way. Any change is difficult. Whenever things change, everyone, you know, there's a resistance. And it's like,
yeah, especially when there's a seismic shift in anything. Like, remember when they removed tobacco advertising for Formula One?
Yeah.
That was there from day one. And people thought, well, that's it. The sport's over. We're never going to find another sponsor. But what happened then? We had an influx of sponsors of people that wouldn't advertise in Formula One because it was tied to smoking.
Exactly. And I think with COVID having just happened, which is a huge thing to have happened, and then, you know, with the financial downturn following COVID, It's just going to take a few years for everything to get back on track, I think.
And the world is very, very different now, you know. I mean, even down to the way people work, you know, I mean, pre-COVID, working at home, not really a thing, honestly.
No, if you had a friend who worked from home, you're like, how'd you manage to wrangle that one? That's brilliant.
Now it's, I think, even, the world's got back to some sort of normality. I mean, you know, COVID hasn't gone away, but we've learned to live with it.
Yep.
There's many people that work at least most of their working week from home, if not exclusively.
Yeah, because we get random rush hour in Leicester. So like Monday, get to work in 10 minutes. Tuesday, 10 minutes. Wednesday, 45 minutes.
Yeah, it's like, Wednesday's their day in the office. Yeah. it's
Wednesday's really bad traffic actually in Leicester. Must be a big day in the office. But, you know, we learn to adapt with these things. And it's the same with all the, you know, making sure you tick all these boxes and adverts.
Yep.
We'll get the hang of it. Like, obviously, we don't want to offend anybody.
No, of course.
Last thing on our list. Like, we can, you know, not facilitate. What's the word I want to use? Accommodate anybody in an advert. That's not an issue. Like, and we want to accommodate anybody. But I think we need to change the way that we process how we're doing that and the thoughts we go through, because we've taken an old way of being a creative. Now we've got this new thing which has come in front of doing the creative, and we need to try and find a way to still be creative, but working in a different order to what we were used to, on tighter budgets, with faster turnarounds. Yeah. You know, everything's up in the air at the moment. So it's a lot of change.
And moving images.
It's got to keep moving. With AI, I think I'm of the same opinion. Pete was like, AI is like CGI was a few years ago. Some people want it, some people don't.
Yeah.
Some people want it, some people won't.
No, it means, you know, I'd do a bit, you know, the CGI. It's there's a time and a place, because there's things you can do with CGI that practically could never be done.
Yeah.
But then equally, real is real. So
exactly. You know, it's, you know, swings and roundabouts. If you just got to choose the right thing for you.
Yeah, and as we say, you know, especially in like TV and the movie world, it's one of those, people say there's, you know, oh, that's bad CGI. Well, you only ever spot that because the good CGI is seamless. You wouldn't know it's there. It just looked completely real.
Well, we've done photo shoots where the bottle afterwards, they're sent, like they've done a bottle redesign and we've dropped in a CGI bottle. You'd never know. Some of the photos on my website have got CGI elements within the actual real photograph. There's no way of knowing.
No, and that's the art to, you know, tasteful and good compositing.
But it's more expensive to CGI something than it is to photograph something.
Yeah, because not only when you have something in front of you, you're taking a photograph of it, there's a method and a way to do it. There's a person, there's lights, there's backdrops, etc. There's a framework. CGI, you create it. So the first thing you have to do before anything happens, somebody has to take that bottle and model it.
Yeah.
With every little logo, every little bump in it to make that real. So you could spend 2 days just making the model before you're ready to start the shoot, which is the bit where you put it, and you start texturing it, lighting it in the 3D environment.
Yeah.
So you've got to think in those terms. That the first things first is somebody has to model that bottle before anything else happens.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. I mean, when we get sent these CGI files, they're just amazing, but they don't look like photographs either.
No, it's its own thing.
Yeah, and it works in certain. It works really well in the drinks industry. The CGI bottle in a drink works really well. But in other things, it's not the one at all. But yeah, moving image, AI is not going to ruin us. The industry is pretty dead, but it's picking up. Hopefully it'll be okay. We've got a few jobs coming up, haven't we?
We have, yes. So, you know, keep
putting on some retouching duties.
Got to keep on ticking, yes. Getting the cramp out of my hand.
Absolutely.
Hours on the tablet.
Yeah, well, I was wondering what you're going to say then. And then
keep it clean, it's a funny joke.
And then, yeah, got those retouching jobs coming up. I think we've got three jobs coming up, which is good. Normally that'd be a year's work, but as Pete said, budgets are squeezed at the moment. Mm. Everything is like cutting corners.
I mean, everyone's looking for the most bang for the buck.
Yeah.
You know, and they don't have the same size of a book that they used to have.
They do not, no. So I don't know. It'll be okay. We'll be all right. We'll become podcasters if it all goes wrong.
Well, who knows, you know. We'd like to see that, put it in the comments.
Yeah. Or the OnlyFans. Fans.
Somebody did something. That was the entire comment was just OnlyFans.
Yeah, maybe that's what we need to be doing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure anybody paid to see this naked, but yeah. No kink shaming here. It's
we could sell our socks at the end of a shoot day. Oh. That'd be niche.
Extremely niche.
Yeah, I think on that note, I think we'll wrap it up and call it end of a show. Lovely. I'll see you all soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.